Okay, so this talk I have been looking forward to for the title alone. Tom Rogers is going to talk to us about domain-specific languages for automating testing of equity order management systems and trading machines. Awesome.
Mostly just trading machines.
So, Tom, it says here that you are a senior developer at Matlock Capital LLC, and you're one of those privately held investment businesses. Mm-hmm. So in the current economic situation we find ourselves in, would you consider yourselves part of the solution or part of the problem?
That's a tough one. We're not a hedge fund, so we're not one of those people.
Okay.
And we're not one of the big investment banks that invested in questionable privately traded over-the-counter securities.
Yeah,
I think I'm on.
Okay.
So in that respect, we're not part of the problem, but we do a lot of derivative trading and all that strange.
Oh, derivatives.
So.
I never liked that in high school either, so I always knew it was bad. All right. Well, everyone, Tom Rogers.
Thank you. I guess we'll start with this. Is this going to work actually for me here? Why is this? Oh, hey, if I plug in the receiver, this is going to work a whole lot better. All right. I can do this the manual way. All right, Matlock Capital, like I said, we're a privately held trading firm. We specialize in stock and options market making. We tend to focus on sophisticated analytics and highly automated trading. We're members of most of the major options exchanges as well as the New York Stock Exchange. In the trading industry, when most people think about DSLs, they're generally thinking about trading logic specification. This tends to be proprietary vendor grammars. A lot of the things that we try to trade are fairly heavy on the math, so a lot of times you'll find them leveraging tools like MATLAB or Mathematica as the underlying tool set for building these languages. There are several other examples of DSLs that you'll commonly encounter in the trading industry. For over-the-counter options, these are not traded on any public exchange. The contract terms are not standardized. And so when a large firm like Microsoft calls up and wants some custom contract quoted, they'll basically specify the terms they want. They typically have a market maker or several market makers on the phone at the same time, and they're looking for the best price and the fastest market maker to give it to them. So sitting around clicking buttons on a GUI and filling out forms doesn't really work very well. So there are shorthand textual DSLs that we use to specify these custom contract terms and build up and price these option contracts. Another common area where we'll use DSLs is in specifying risk scenarios. What we try to do is simulate the behavior of a particular portfolio over a wide range of market conditions to try to figure out how much money we would lose if, the Dow plunges by 50% or whatever. And these risk scenarios tend to change fairly frequently, so we want to have them flexible and not compiled in. For instance, we recently added a 90% down scenario based on what's going on in the market right now. So we'll have DSLs for this sort of thing. Another common area is risk report generation. This is typically in large investment banks, you have central risk clearing, and they basically vend out customized risk reports to multiple trading desks. And so what they'll try to do is slice the firm's overall risk and provide particular views on that risk to a particular trading desk. And the problem with this is it's not just standard OLAP query and aggregation, because you can't aggregate everything. There needs to be custom aggregation rules and custom ways to slice these report metrics across multiple internal trading desks.
I have a question.
Yes?
You mentioned that you're using the DSL as a sort of shorthand grammar for data entry inputting data.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, do you actually realize a substantial savings in terms of getting the data into the system to process more quickly?
Yeah. We have custom date grammars, for instance, so instead of like picking dates off of a calendar, it understands like this contract will expire on this date by some shorthand 3-character code or whatever. And so it's much quicker to type that in than it would be to like click a drop down on a calendar and scroll through and pick a date, for instance. Contract sizes, we can basically have common contract size increments that can be specified rather than hitting like a spin control or anything like that. So that's why it tends to be faster. So instead of like, you know, a couple of minutes trying to basically click and enter all this data, I might be able to type this sentence out that describes a contract in 20 seconds, particularly if I do it all day long. So, yes?
So the good thing about UI-based tools is that they're fairly easily discoverable, right? How much more training, what's the learning curve to learn for people to learn a DSL versus learning a tool, you know, a UI-based tool?
The question is versus a GUI, what is the learning curve for people to learn the DSL for these sorts of things? It's pretty high. I mean, it's certainly not nearly as simple as as using a standard GUI where everything's kind of laid out for you. But, you know, options market makers tend to be very, you know, intelligent, highly sophisticated computer users. They're not developers, but they're pretty fluent in computers, and they tend to pick it up fairly quickly. And if they're doing it all day long, it just becomes second nature after a little bit.
How long does it take you?
A month or two, maybe.
Yeah. Yes?
Have you run into any problems where they want like more and more features and it gets to the point where your DSL is almost turning into a more general purpose programming language by the end?
So the question is, do we run into issues where they keep wanting more and more features, and does this sort of approach a general development language in the end? And the answer is sort of. I mean, at the end of the day, they're just specifying option contract terms. So there's actually a limited range of what can be specified. There's a limited type or limited range of what we actually know how to price. So to some extent, that's limited, but it certainly can become cumbersome as they ask for more and more features to be added to these little languages. Okay. So back to trading logic DSLs. I mean, one of the big problems that we run into is they tend to be too specific. They're vended usually by somebody who's selling a software package. Most software vendors in the financial industry tend to have a fairly small customer base trading particular kinds of strategies, and it ends up that their tools basically are tailored to a particular set of strategies. It may not be what we trade, and in most cases we found it isn't. So they're really only useful for some of the most simplistic cases, and they often have poorly designed grammars. There's a complete lack of debugging tools that we've generally found. Particularly with mathematics packages, the performance is rather poor. Mathematica is a great mathematics package, but it really isn't designed to be driven with, you know, 10,000 ticks a minute in trying to evaluate a trading strategy and execute a trade in 5 milliseconds after every tick that comes through. And a lot of these packages, since they have very small customer bases, are very expensive. So at Matlock, I mean, we trade over 500,000 orders a day. We look to grow this to 2 million orders over the next year. We'll issue 4 million option quotes into option markets, and we expect to increase that to 10 million quotes per year. We expect to make the majority of our trading decisions within 5 to 10 milliseconds of a price tick. And we don't really want to have more than a couple of traders have to monitor the entire trading system. So we really need the individual trading decisions to be managed correctly, because all we're expecting traders to do is to make sure that the behavior of the system as a whole is behaving correctly and to push the big red button if things go horribly wrong. This is roughly what our trading system looks like. We have a ticker plant. This essentially aggregates all the market data feeds from like the NYSE, NASDAQ, CBOE, and so on. We feed this into our price servers. These basically filter the input price ticks, because not all market data is good. There are a number of problems that I'll talk about in a minute that crop up with market data. The other thing that this does is provide us a consistent snapshot of what the current market data is for at any given instant in time, because we have to restart something during the day. You can't really kind of wait for all the ticks to stream in and get a consistent snapshot. So you'd like to be able to go and get a consistent snapshot and start trading immediately. We also take some additional market data. The volatility of underlying stocks is very important to pricing options. We have proprietary forecasts of volatility. Those models are executed overnight. They're these huge S plus R runs that provide a bunch of data that inputs into volatility service. Same thing with interest rates. We then update that data in real time throughout the day. We feed all of that information into a couple of different areas of our system. Risk takes our current position plus market data, runs a range of hypothetical scenarios, and then provides risk measures along with that market data to our quote generation logic. And what this is basically doing is saying for everything that we trade, this is the price we either want to pay for it or the price we want to sell it at. And from there, if we're participating in a particular, say, Apple, we're a market maker for Apple on the CBOE, we will send those quotes directly to the CBOE. We also take the same quote stream and feed it to a number of automated trading machines, which look at various aspects of the market data and make a trading decision, either, you know, buy or sell something in response to that. All that gets managed by an automated order management system that, once the trading machines hand off their order requests, it's all completely managed by the order management system, and the order management system takes care of routing those to the correct exchange, dealing with position updates as we get fills on our orders, and we'll also deal with keeping us from getting into too much trouble if something goes horribly wrong upstream. This is kind of the last point at which we can interrupt trade flow before we actually committed to it. So we'd like to be able to intercept and ensure that things don't go too wrong too quickly in this layer here. So our goal is to trade at scale safely. We do sophisticated analysis and price filtering of price feeds. We don't want a situation where a clerk drops a decimal point and you get a price that's an order of magnitude off of what the actual market is, and suddenly you're offering to pay 10 times more for something than it's actually worth. Everybody's going to jump on that, and you're obligated to do it. So we want to make sure that we don't get caught in those situations. If markets move too quickly down, the exchange will issue a trading stop. We don't want to be trying to route orders when there are trading stops. There's also situations where, you know, the old adage, buy low, sell high, the market will actually invert, and we don't want to actually be buying high and selling low. So we analyze the price feeds and mark those with price quality indicators that are then used downstream to make sure that we're not trading on bad data. We look to minimize the risk of catastrophic loss in adverse market conditions. This is done through real-time exposure monitoring, and we adjust our quotes basically. If we think we're taking on too much risk, we'll widen out our quotes to make them less favorable to trade in the market. In most cases, we're still obligated to actually issue quotes since we're a market maker. But if we put them so far off the market, it's really unlikely that we'll ever get actually hit on those quotes and have to trade that. If we think something's mispriced in the market, we'll actually narrow our quotes towards that mispricing to pick up those trades. We do automated hedging. Since we're a market maker, we have to be on both sides of the market. We are obligated to either buy or sell, and we don't know ahead of time when we put a quote in the market whether we're going to have to actually buy or sell that trade. So when the trade actually happens, we have to hedge our risk away in an automated fashion to make sure that we are staying within our own internal limits and the limits that are imposed on us by regulatory rules. We have trade sentinels that monitor our order flow and preempt routing to exchanges. Our trading machines have no synchronization of state between each other. They don't talk to each other about what's working. And what we attempt to do is basically make sure that two trading machines can't be on, one can't be buying and selling. One can't be buying what another one's selling at the same time. Violates an exchange rule, and we have to pay for those transactions, so it would just cost us money even if it were actually something we could do. We also want to ensure that we don't trade or have more than a certain number of orders for a particular kind of strategy working in a market at any given point. We want to preempt poor price quality from an exchange. We want to use poor price quality indicators from exchange to actually preempt us from actually sending an order, so if there were a mistake in an upstream trading strategy that still tried to send an order to this exchange, we would prevent it from actually going there. Yes?
So Thomas, I'm just drowning in the precision of your organization and the fabulous work that you do under the covers. Surely all this doesn't show up in the DSO.
No.
All this magic must be in the wonderful framework. And it is a powerful, fabulous framework, and that's why there's so much value to use it. But surely the DSO doesn't have all these switches on.
No,
I don't know. I'm just curious.
What?
I'm
almost there. Sorry, I'm just trying to give. I'm trying to give a flavor of kind of what we do and why. Ultimately, trying to test these systems is both important and actually kind of hard to do. So anyway, there's all that stuff. We'll skip right along. So trading systems tend to be fairly difficult to test. They're distributed. They're asynchronous message-driven architectures. They're sensitive to timing. Trading strategy growth tends to be fairly organic. We are trying ultimately to codify a trader's intuition about what should happen in the market. It's not always correct. And oftentimes we're reacting to short-lived market conditions. It's often easier to specify what the system clearly should not be doing than it is to actually specify what is correct, which is somewhat different, I think, than a lot of areas where you try to test something, because you basically say, this is the correct behavior, and I can test it and prove that it does. You know, when I go to my ATM, take out $100, my account gets debited by $100. We're not always sure that what we tell the system to do is the right thing. We can tell it what it should never be doing. So all this kind of points to the fact that, I mean, a lot of the issues that we have, since our systems are asynchronous, and in particular, like, the developers don't always know what the actual correct specification of the trading logic ought to be. So we have to work closely with traders or financial engineers to try to figure out what that is. But oftentimes, when we try to present them the code that does this, the actual meaning of what's going on is lost in the sea of synchronization with some set of asynchronous events that are going on outside the system. And so what we'd like to do is tailor a DSL that actually captures exactly kind of the concepts that a trader might understand about what's going on in the system and push all that noise away to the framework. It's a much smaller surface area than trying to do a trading logic DSL. We need a match on system events, generate a variety of events in response to that, prices, quotes, orders, and so on, perform some basic assertions and comparisons. We would like to make these tests business readable. We don't expect them to write them. As Martin mentioned earlier, that's, I think, not really a realistic expectation. We'd like to, as much as possible, use the language that traders use when discussing these terms, and it'd be nice if we could try or apply behavior-driven design to trading strategy development. So principal input to any system under test will be market prices. We would like to be able to specify various kinds of market tick types. Last trade is what most people are familiar with. It's the last trade that occurred. This is the current price that Microsoft sold at. This is what you see on your CNBC scroll. This is what all the ticker samples that you find on MSDN tend to show you. These are not really all that useful to us. There's actually a range of other things that we care about. Bid ask is the current best bid and offer price in the market at any given point. And for multiply listed issues, particularly options, what are the other prices being bid and offered on other exchanges, because they're not always exactly in agreement, and so you might be able to find pricing imbalances and want to act on those if they're happening on another exchange. You don't necessarily always want to be able to trade the best possible price. We want to be able to generate price feeds from various techniques, and we'd like to be able to load historical prices from databases and files. So let's see here if I can get this to... So this is an example of sort of what this might look like. Part of this was I also want an excuse to actually play around with the Oslo bits. So this first declaration, I'm declaring a price feed. I give it a name. I tell it how frequently I want to tick. So in this case, I'm saying 25 milliseconds. And in this example, I'm basically saying I have an Apple tick. It had 500 shares were traded at 119.50, Microsoft 250 at 16.50. In the next case, this is a bid ask tick. So basically I'm saying this price feed ticks at 25 milliseconds again. I've got Apple, and there's a current bid in the market for 250 shares at $118 at 500 shares for $119.75. so on and so forth for Microsoft and Google. We also trade options, so we need to be able to simulate option price ticks. Option markets move at a much slower rate than equity markets, so we'll say this one only ticks at 100 milliseconds. This is an Apple contract, expires in July for 120 strike. It's a put option, same size, price on the bid, size, price on the ask, same for Microsoft, except a call option. And then for price generators, we have a bit more elaborate syntax. This is basically an Apple July 120 put option. We're going to generate 500 prices. We're going to seed a quasi-random number generator with 5. We want the same set of prices every time we run this test case, so we have a consistent seed, produces the same results. We want to be able to generate last trade ticks from this, so this probability here of 10 says 10% of these trades will execute and result in fill, so this will generate last trade ticks for 10% of the 500 prices that it generates. We give a size range and a range of bid-ask prices, and the other thing it will do is say depth of book. I want 10 other prices to come along with this to simulate the behavior of this option trading on potentially several other exchanges. And the second one's a little more involved. This is basically saying, oops, I have actually the wrong sample here. Actually, no, I do not. This is correct. So in the case where I want to actually trade both stocks and options, I can derive the an approximate option value from the stock price. So if I generate stock prices and I know the volatility of that stock, then I can take the stock price and come up with something that roughly approximates the value of the option. I also need additional information to tell me what exchanges things trade on. I need to be able to generate correct option symbols. It's easy with stocks because the symbols, Microsoft is always Microsoft, Apple is always Apple. But depending on whether it's a put or a call option and what the strike is and what the expiration is, you get a 3-letter code followed by some 2-letter code that basically results in the option symbol. So we actually need to be able to generate those for tests because we can't rely on actually using them because they change all the time. So we just have to simulate that behavior. And we also need to basically, for option symbols, say where they trade. So in this case, I'm saying the stocks trade on NASDAQ, they have these option routes, and the options trade on the CBOE, and they have those symbols. Yes?
Back to my previous question.
Yes.
This, to me, reads like advanced Russian.
Yes.
But sure, you're not a domain expert.
My question is, A, how quickly do domain experts get that? No, actually, A is, who is actually using this DSL? Is it traders? Who is actually using this DSL to define those tests? And the second question is, how quickly do they pick this up, being that you are using their terms, et cetera, et cetera? Mm-hmm.
The question is who uses this and how quickly would they pick this up? Well, since this is sort of something I'm playing around with, nobody uses it currently except me. But the intention would be our financial engineers. I mean, most of these guys have some background in software development. They're not software developers. Most of them tend to be physicists and mathematicians. So fairly technically savvy people. This would be much easier for them to pick up than if this was interleaved with a whole bunch of C# around it to basically structure, how I would asynchronously feed these prices into a testing framework. Yes?
Quick question about exactly what you want to test with this. Right. You mentioned several tricky problems testing, so I'm a bit confused if you're wanting to test many things or just one. So let me give you 3 examples. So
okay.
One would be, if you are generating these data sets to actually kind of perform some sort of a Monte Carlo simulation or some sort of a historical backtest.
Mm-hmm.
Another would be if you want to use this kind of language to actually do, like you said, kind of test behavior of the strategies and see that what the domain experts think they've told you is kind of, passing these test scenarios. And then the third would be kind of testing systems themselves, you know. So because you've talked about, you know, how different parts of the system, you know, behave, and you want to be able to test them asynchronously and whatnot. So do you see it to target all those things, or do you see it to target only one?
Typically with back testing, we will end up, for the most part, they'll go and write something in Mathematica, feed a bunch of historical price data through it, analyze those results. So we don't really, I wouldn't envision this being used for back testing. I would tend to view it being used more for behavioral testing of particular parts of the trading system. It actually would probably be fairly impractical to try to test this as a whole. Our system is distributed across 100, 120 servers in three geographic locations. It's really hard to actually bring that scale up in any kind of meaningful way in some testing environment. That's another big issue that we have. So I don't know that I would see it for testing the totality of a trading system. I might be able to say in a particular sample I'll give, I have a particular trading strategy with a set of inputs, and I want to have a range of market responses and have it react in an appropriate way. So I'd test that particular trading strategy with this.
So testing the behavior of the logic itself.
Right.
This DSL just for inputting the data, or do you actually then have the results that you're testing against here as well?
In this case, we're just inputting data to simulate a price feed. What I'll get to in just a second is actually matching on a range of behaviors, generating responses to that, which actually drives a test runner then that actually controls the system under test. So this is, you've seen this before, actually just in the previous talk. This is done with an M grammar. So we have a grammar, load up a set of prices. Oh, great. I have an error in this grammar. I did not have an error in this grammar before. What did I do?
Must have gotten Paul's latest bill.
I don't have Paul's latest build. I'm going to suspect that it's perhaps that. So have an M grammar, reads this, produces a parse tree from there. And this is sort of the general flavor of how I end up dealing with this data. I'm just going to quickly kind of run through this. I also want an excuse to kind of play around with F sharp with this. So F sharp has some nice features for doing language-oriented programming, one of which is the ability to design your own active patterns to match on the structure of graphs. So what I get out of the M graph I get from the parser, I have to do something with, and I'm looking to actually pick out particular pieces of it and build up some set of data that I'm going to actually initialize my runner. So I can define what the various basic components from the graph that I want to match on are. And then from there, I can build up more elaborate definitions of prices. One of the nice features of F-sharp are union types. So for every given price type that I can define in my grammar, I have a type and a union here that basically, you know, I have simple prices, I have a last price tick, I have generated prices, I have price loaders, and so on and so forth. And then I have additional active patterns that match on structures of these particular types by pulling stuff in from the M graph and vending up that top level type. So that
the M graph from this
F sharp. Yes. So parser load the input through it. I get an M graph from it, and then I use a set of active patterns to then match over that and rip out some top level type. So in this case, the thing that would be produced by the bottom most pattern down here, this feed list, is a list of these feed types here, which then contain prices and so on and so forth. So that's the general flavor of how this is implemented. Let's see. Checking my time here. Okay, now why am I not getting my presenter view back here? Okay, here it is. There, I have to jump to the right window. So that's the grammar for prices. This alone really doesn't get us where we want to be, so there's a number of other issues we need to deal with. A lot of our systems are message-driven using either JMS, TIBCO RV, FIX is a protocol that's used to exchange data with other financial institutions. We also use it internally for messaging. The systems under test are all asynchronous. Most of them are actually written with the Microsoft concurrency coordination and concurrency runtime, so handling this sort of asynchronous behavior becomes really cumbersome, and as I mentioned before, kind of buries the details of what you're trying to test around all the synchronization logic. So what we really want to be able to do is hide all that away under a DSL and have a runner deal with all those details. And that grammar looks like this. So I want to define a context in which I'm going to execute my test. It has some descriptive information. In this case, I'm saying I want to trade a covered call and recover from a trade failure. One of the issues that we have in testing these things is we want to actually make the system behave as if it were operating on a particular date and time, because a lot of what we trade is time sensitive. So we need to be able to rerun these tests on the date and time that we specify. So we have to capture that information. Fixed connections are identified by a sender and a target. This basically identifies, this is who I'm sending from, this is the target I'm sending to. They'll respond with the inverse pair, so I need to define connections. In this particular case, what I'm looking to trade is a strategy called a covered call. So I've contrived some prices to actually cause my trading machine under test to actually do that strategy, or to actually do trades according to that strategy. In the case of a covered call, what you're trying to do is you're buying stock and you're selling a call option on it simultaneously. The idea is if you sell the call option, the price you get for the call option reduces the amount of money you have invested in the stock, so you actually buy some downside protection if the stock moves against you. But what you don't really ever want to do is have a call option be uncovered, because if that call option gets exercised, and it can get exercised at any moment, you're obligated to deliver that stock no matter what, no matter how much it costs you, so you can actually go seriously negative. Most brokers will not allow you to do this. So what we'd like to be able to ensure is, this is the same sort of exchange definition, is we want to start a price feed. We're going to expect a covered call to come from our connection here within a particular time frame. We want to actually give it a name. We'll accept the option part of the order. We're going to reject the stock part of the order. So the option is now working in the market. We're going to fill it. This leaves our option position uncovered. We then expect the trading strategy to trade out of the uncovered position. And if it issues this order within the allowed time frame, in this case it's 500 milliseconds, we'll accept that order and fill it. And if all this happens as expected, this will pass the test. So we're going back to, was it you that had the question about
what was being tested?
So I mean, in this case, I'm just testing this trading machine. It's actual trading strategy behavior for this one particular case.
So given that some people are going to be reading this, sort of the financial analysts or the physicists, mathematicians, you have some of this sort of object-oriented notation, you know, new order dot option dot
property. Right.
Do they pick that up without any problem?
Yeah, most of them have had some exposure to either VB, VBA, or C#. Okay. Yes?
Have you involved the domain experts in the writing of the DSL? Are they actually involved in telling you what should you wear?
Not currently. This is kind of a sample to actually just to take to them and show them initially, would this actually be useful as a means of sort of communicating back and forth between us. So this is very much a work in progress at this point.
Are all of your technical guys as smart as you as far as the domain? Do they do a lot of training?
Most of them are smarter than I am about this.
The domain, not the technical.
I tend to deal with mostly order management stuff, so I deal with the particular mechanics of working trades once they get to the market. I don't really deal with a lot of the option pricing aspects of it. I know basic, you know, basic option strategies, and that's about it.
Do you have any notion in here of, I guess, atomicity or, you know, business transaction tracking or, you know, any durability of these?
In terms of between
these steps, does it keep track of that information, or?
Well, or over the whole call.
Yes, it actually. Well, the trading machine itself, currently in the case of the runner, just keeps track of what it's working. The runner itself actually doesn't keep track of anything at this point. We would probably take the logic from our order management system and probably put that some of that logic in the runner to actually ensure that, you know, both the working trades are kept track of, positions are kept track of, because another thing we need to be able to produce, which is not currently being generated, are position updates being sent back into the system, and that actually will need to keep track of those sorts of transactions as they occur. But in the sort of current demo that I have, that's not really there yet. So I just keep track of identifiers. You can capture results and use those results in subsequent actions. Yes?
You use historical data to test this testing system, basically?
Yes, you could.
Try the data from last September and October, just to see
how Not yet. I mean, we have clearly in our sort of back testing of models, and in particular when we were looking at doing kind of our 90% down scenario, we back tested our risk management system against that data to make sure that we make sure that we lose no more than 50% of our working capital, even if the market goes 90% down, was kind of the goal.
What I was reading back then is we can expect more of those. Just things are so much more accelerated now. Financial events are so accelerated that the time between these sort of market drops would be shorter than it used to be.
Yes, I think that's true.
The market escalations is the time would be shorter between those two.
Do what?
Time between the escalations.
When it goes back up again?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's all, you know, it's all momentum driven. Everybody's reacting to news, and they're either fleeing the market or going back into the market when people are, you know, saying the sky is falling or, oh, it's all rosy. So I think there's just going to be more of that. And it has made a lot of these, you know, a lot of our strategies assume a fairly consistent behavior over a long period of time in the market. It doesn't really always work out that way. Right.
So I assume this DSL is a proposal for how to test the behavior of your systems. How do they currently test it?
Manually, at best. Sometimes live in the market. We don't have a lot of choices in many cases. So we'll put something out there, put specific limits on how much we can trade, and keep a very close eye on it and slowly ramp it up over time. It's not really an ideal situation. Let's see. In a few more minutes. So as before, F-sharp to basically break this down into some data to then drive a runner. The runner itself is written in a mix of C-sharp and F-sharp. It's built on top of the Microsoft's concurrency coordination runtime. Again, most of the stuff is asynchronous, so the CCR provides a nice framework for developing those sorts of systems. The trading strategy itself is really quite, I can't see because this monitor is rather blurry. All right, so trading strategy, very simple. We have a set of ports. We expect inbound prices and execution reports. We expect to generate outbound orders. This block type is basically a container for N orders, which represents our trading strategy. When we get ticks, we record them. periodically we'll look at a range of ticks that we have, make a trading decision, and if we trade, then we'll generate a new block. We have a stock option or a stock that we're going to trade based on the market data we had coming in. I've got a hardwired price in this case. And same thing in the case of the option, I'm buying 5 and I add that to my working orders list. And then I have a separate handler that picks up execution reports, keeps track of what is working, and then I'll periodically sweep the current working state to see if any position's been left uncovered. So, as I mentioned, most of these messages that we send around are fix, and if you want a definition of a human hostile data format, fix is pretty much it. Just to give you kind of a flavor of what we don't want to actually expose really to even developers, but in particular to traders, is this. This is the order that actually gets constructed out of this, and I'm sure that makes a hell of a lot of sense. So these are the sorts of things we never want to actually expose the developer. And so what I've done is I've basically made a pluggable model for strategies. So I want to match on this structure, call it a covered call. If it meets these parameters, has 2 trades in it, one of them is a stock, one of them is an option, I'm buying the option, I'm selling the stock. Or sorry, the other way around, buying stock, selling the option. Then it's a covered call, match on it. The covered calls, or the option, the strategy matchers are then pluggable. So in the grammar, in the case of like where I say expect strategy covered call is an identifier, would be a lookup on a matcher, and I'm basically expecting an order that matches that definition, and then I will execute these actions in response. Orders, it's hardwired, and orders and orders, so all we need to know is quantity and type that we're expecting to respond to it. And I'm about out of time, so I'll just run the runner just to basically do that. So and of course it's putting the window on the wrong monitor. So it actually executed through. So starting our context, using a particular data as our start data, registering the covered call trading machine, listing for prices on a particular test feed, routing orders to a particular target, starting our different test specifications. In this case, we only have one. We start the price feed ticking. We expect the covered call matcher to match within 30 seconds. And the expectation is met, then it executes the particular actions, and then it expects it to trade out of this position. But unfortunately, I have a bug in my message routing right now, so the expectation fails because the response is actually never getting back to the runner, and I didn't have time to sort it out before today. So
the test succeeded.
Did it?
The test caught the error.
Well, in that case, it certainly. I mean, that was sort of the philosophical. Question, and it's like, does it need to actually pass and prove success, or just failing good enough? So
you learn something.
Yeah, I learned that my message routing is wrong. I really don't know if my trading strategy is right still. So, yes.
So would you ever consider writing this trading strategies? Because I noticed it was all in C sharp in a DSL, or is it just not? Would making that DSL be too complicated for that?
So the question is, would we ever consider writing these trading strategies in a DSL versus C#? As I mentioned before, like a lot of problems we've had with commercial products is I think the range of expressions that you have to cover makes, certainly for our development team, which is 12 people, somewhat impractical, I think, to cover everything that we would need to. I think we would probably go the internal DSL route as opposed to trying to write some external DSL for this. And I think certainly the internal DSL techniques might be beneficial because they at least sort of simplify the ocean of logic that's going on into something that's, you know, a smaller sentence of what's, you know, what some expectation is and so on and so forth. So, yes.
So I noticed you were using Oslo. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I was just curious how that, what you were using before and how the Oslo experience was.
We, before, we were basically trying to hack these up using NUnit and C#. And I think if the documentation were better on the actual APIs for reading the mGraph, I would give the Oslo experience probably the nod. So when that documentation's available, I think this would probably be a much quicker way ultimately of doing it, especially now that I'm kind of past the learning curve on what I actually need to pluck out of the graph to drive this sort of thing. I don't have time to actually go through it, but I some of the NUnit test cases for this, when they get really rather cumbersome when you're trying to actually do this in C#, because I have to basically set up all these prices, I have to set up some you know, arbiter context in the CCR, run a bunch of asynchronous events, set some manual events because NUnit can't deal with, you know, background thread processing, so you have to wait on an event in the foreground thread. And then based on data that you capture in these asynchronous events, try to figure out what happened because you can't raise the assertions in the threads because they'll never get back to the NUnit runner and that sort of thing. So that's really quite a mess. So just from the standpoint of being able to test, even like one of the things we're looking at doing is a new upgrade of our order management system. And I'm looking at using something like this for testing the behavior of the order management system. It's fairly well-defined set of state transitions that orders work through. There's some well-known cases of problems that markets have, particularly if it's a open floor cry pit. Clerks don't always return every single market event, but we want to be able to treat manually traded issues as if they were automated, so we have to deal with all these particular failures, so having some way to specify those and then actually prove that the code responds correctly is would be nice, and actually have it be human readable at the end of the day as opposed to a bunch of hideous NUnit tests.
So it was, in general, a win for you?
In general, a win. I think it's still very rough, but as it gets better, I think it'll be a much bigger win for us.
And so right now, is this a thing that exists on your machine, or is it in production? Are you using it?
This just exists on my machine. This is purely a spike to just test what if, and kind of where we're going to go from here is when I go back, I'll start having discussions with our business guys to see kind of their input on how to make this actually more useful for them and understanding how we test these trading systems, and then from there we'll figure out where to go.
Yes.
How long did it take you to put the whole thing together?
Probably about a month. There's a whole bunch of infrastructure that sits underneath this that I want to be able to give the code out, so I couldn't really reuse everything that we have internally because some of it's probably not really anything you want to look at, and a lot of it is still fairly proprietary to what we do. So I tried to basically write up a simple trading machine framework, price feed framework that's completely independent of code we already have, and so that actually, that part of it took a long time. The actual Oslo bits, once I figured out what was going on, went pretty quick. It probably took me less than 2 or 3 days to put the grammar together.
Well, I can't think of any better way to end the talk than that. Thank you very much.